top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
What was that?
First, there was the invasion of the body snatchers. Then there was Alien.
Now comes the return of the aliens, the deadly spawn.
It began with a meteor crashing to Earth. No one knew the mystery of the mutant spores it contained. Now, they are free. They will grow and reproduce rapidly, eating anything and anyone in their path.
The Return of the Aliens, the Deadly Spawn.
What do you do when unknown terror surrounds you? What do you do when there is no escape? Nowhere to hide from being eaten alive.
What the f***?
They just keep multiplying like demon seed. Extraterrestrial terror. They're full of surprises. And the best is yet to come. Can anything stop these strange creatures? The movie real science fiction fans have been waiting for.
The Return of the Aliens, the Deadly Spawn.
Want you to see them at this theater soon.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 395 of the Really Awful Movies podcast, The Deadly Spawn. I'm reminded of a line by a comedian, Stephen Wright. It's, whatever temperature a room is, it's always room temperature. Well, that's what I was thinking as it pertains to regional horrors, because, I mean, what horror film or the production thereof isn't associated with a particular region or multiple regions? In this case, and in the case of regional horrors, broadly speaking, it's often the case that a lot of the labor is volunteer, and frequently, though not always, you're not going to get a big distribution for this kind of film, or much in the way of high-powered cast members or anything. A lot of it is amateurs, and a lot of it is just funded by whatever, local business improvement associations, dentists, that kind of thing. And we've made no bones about the fact that on this podcast we've covered several of these and quite enjoy them. And depending on how they're defined, they can range from anything from the likes of Malatesta to Offerings, Hayride, Unhinged, a number of these films that have actually come across our radar and spanning multiple geographies as well. The Deadly Spawn is firmly in New York's backyard, and that is New Jersey. Obviously most closely associated with the likes of The Sopranos. And this is a regional horror that came out in 83 and is built around the conceit of something hurtling towards Earth. And this is just a common, a standard trope amongst tons of horror slash sci-fi genre bending, genre crossing movies, whether you want to look at the most obvious one is The Blob, but there's also more recently the Nicolas Cage star, The Color Out of Space, and of course, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Hell, you could throw Predator in there as well. Anytime something hurtles to Earth, crashes, and is used as the as the genesis for whatever film, then you're quickly in that camp. And the Deadly Spawn, as its title would suggest, is about an alien life force that's implants itself and becomes attached to life on Earth and begins to cause havoc. Now, I mistakenly thought I saw this one by virtue of the fact that I actually own an anthology film called Chillerama, of which a Deadly Spawn type... Chillerama is an anthology series that came out, I want to say, 2009 or 2010. It could be earlier by a couple of years. I hope I've got it right. There was a... nearby where I live in Toronto, near Koreatown, there was a video store, one of the last remaining in the city, and it went under, and they did a fire sale of just basically unloading all their merch and all their everything that they had, and they were unloading it for the princely sum of 99 cents, you know, a dollar per DVD. And of course, seeing this, I thought I would pounce, because at the time I was really much more of a collector than I am now. And as much as I love physical media, I just don't have the space for it. But there was just a swath of stuff that was just on the market all of a sudden, and one of which was Chillerama. And it's got this sort of, if you look at the cover, it's got these creatures, somewhat phallic, toothy, almost leech-like creatures, but it's almost what you'd expect to see from Attack of the Giant Leeches, or maybe the Stu Gordon, the famous production with Jeffrey Combs, my apologies, From Beyond. So this kind of squishy, oozy, you could even throw in brain damage as the kind of creature that with which you'd most associate this kind of penile, a phallic creature. And it's really something that jumps out at you, no pun intended. But it's something that stuck with me, and I saw Chillerama. Anything you see, like, you know, I'm thinking of the Slime Bowl, Bolarama, and Sorority Babes. Anytime you see Ama, you're just, oh, mama, I should pick that up. And I grabbed it. It was a fun anthology. I'm not the biggest anthology guy, but there's a few segments in there that really stuck with me. There was one, I think, with these killer sperm as well. That was really badass. But I think half of them fell a little bit short of the mark. But I thought this was a pretty fun little flick. And I think some of the principals involved in the Deadly Spawn went on to produce some of the Chillerama work. And I want to say this is Kevin McEwan, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but this is his one and only film, The Deadly Spawn, and it was many years in the making, and despite that, it actually has a certain sense of charm to it, and you don't associate it with the kind of lengthy continuity errors that you'd see with something like Dangerous Men or perhaps The Room, most infamously. It took 2 years because this was a neighborhood production. This was a community production of the people in it's Jersey City, but correct me if I'm wrong in that one. Just basically the nearest towns to New York City on the PATH train in the Garden State. And just basically a bunch of people who got together and jerry-rigged this film with that was in 1980s dollars, I think it was around... I think the star said it clocked in at around the 30K mark. And this is a really threadbare production, as you'd expect from something that was put together so on the cheap. But in today's dollars, it's about probably 55K. So, and when you think about it, you look at some other low budget, and hell, you could throw this in the regional category too, perhaps. The Evil Dead, which I think clocked in at comparatively Titanic almost a sum of 300K. It's amazing what can be done when you have something that is spearheaded by a little bit of ingenuity and some great creature effects, and done really, really on the cheap, but wonderfully put together. I'm thinking of a Canadian horror that I podcasted here too called The Brain, which had similarly squishy, icky creature effects, and also maybe the fellow 80s horror Terror Vision. If you like those, or maybe the likes of Cellar Dweller, because this thing The creature eventually makes its way into this Victorian home in New Jersey. But you think of the likes of Cellar Dweller, you think of something that originates from space and then affixes itself to, you know, some member of the local population. And true to form, and this is a caveat here, when you see a meteor strike the Earth, as the two principals in this do, do not go to investigate, but run the opposite direction, far, far away, hop in an Uber, get yourself into a different time zone, remove yourself from the situation entirely. A little bit of advice here, but that's not heeded. And what you have is these creatures emerge, they almost look like a combination of phalluses and piranha. So they have these very serrated, long teeth. And there's a little bit of little Shop of Horrors in here, too. I could just rattle off a litany of creature features this one really resembles. But the Deadly Spawn, I mean, is once these creatures become embedded in this Victorian home, that's where everything starts to unravel for the people there. And you get the drip and the cheap and cheerful theremin sounding sound effects. This is good stuff when you have someone inspecting the basement. There's a drain, there's gurgles, there's creaks, there's groans, there's all this kind of stuff as the people who live in this house go down to investigate and find out that there's an alien life force living in their basement. And, I mean, you can't fault this kind of thing. It's just, it is what it is, and they have McKeon, the filmmaker, has the good sense to let this one breathe. And and set up the proceedings with something cool right off the bat. So even though there's a meteor strike or aliens coming to Earth on this, what is clearly a matte kind of painting, because they really didn't have the budget to do anything beyond that. And you have this house on the hill, a la Psycho, which is actual home. And you just got to love the guerrilla DIY filmmaking approach. It's just really great. You have someone investigating the cellar. You have the drip, 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 and then, you know, they meet their maker, and you're introduced to this Little Shop of Horrors character, and really the rest of it is the relatives in this home and some of the townsfolk having to fight off these creatures. And I think there's a little bit of, writing about what you know, but the screenwriters have this hero who's a young kid, as was par for the course in a lot of these 80s movies, who is able to MacGyver and jerry-rig a bunch of different materials in order to finally get the upper hand on these creatures. And I mean, you can't help but just be amused by this one. I mean, 30K with a bunch of neighbors from the town just being enlisted over the course of several, well, I mean, I'd say maybe 100 or so weeks, working maybe one night or one weekend per week, and eventually crafting something that, unbelievably, in the case of the Deadly Spawn, actually had some mass distribution. So at the time, we're talking about perhaps two-thirds of the way into the slasher boom. Horror was all the rage from 1978 to about 85, and this would have been the time when distributors were really looking for anything, especially something with a catchy, immediately impactful, pardon the meteor-related pun, of the Deadly Spawn. It's something that would catch my eye. And for something this cheap, it actually was screened in the Grindhouse circuit in Times Square. And this was the time when, instead of going direct to Tubi, which is almost like the direct-to-video of our current day now, this was put in front of enough eyeballs to make this a very, very, very minor little cult hit. And it subsequently gained quite a bit of traction over the years. And when you think about it, my podcasting partner Jeff texted me and said Terror Train, the Jamie Lee Curtis original, came out, I believe, in the early 80s. That had a reboot, and I don't know how closely they strayed or adhered to the original, or whether they even had a magician in the reimagining of it. But a la David Copperfield, of course, from the first one. But that thing I mean, talk about sad. It didn't even get a mass, if you want to call it, streaming distribution. It was solely relegated to Tubi. And as much as I like Tubi for having a lot of genre films and tons of horror films, it's not exactly, like, the cream of the crop isn't exactly on that platform, through no fault of its own. I mean, it is what it is. It's just an adjunct, an addendum to, just another source for finding stuff to stream in this multi-channel, multi-streaming, multimedia verse that in which we currently inhabit. And it's just amazing to me how a little film like this one, The Deadly Spawn, could actually become somewhat well known. And again, as is par for the course for some of these regional horrors like a Malatesta or the Brain, which was, I believe, filmed in Hamilton, which is an hour outside of Toronto, city of 500,000 people. Just stuff that's filmed locally. It's just such was the time for horror. It was such a golden age that it was so ripe for release that any distributor was really willing to take a chance and get this in front of as many people as possible. Similarly, we're living in a golden age, at least as far as horror is concerned, because even small films can get widely distributed and stuff like Paranormal Activity or these films that that followed the explosion of point of view horror and or found footage. They were able to be done on the cheap. Well, generally, horror movies can be done on the cheap, at least compared to other types of films. And they have a built-in audience. And whether that audience will continue to be in theater, I guess, remains to be seen. Action films and horror remain the ones that most require the communal theater experience. But again, that's something we thought was integral to things. And it's something that people thought probably as VHS tapes were rolling out too. And the theater experience, I think, might be on its last legs, not because of streaming per se, but I think just because of all the other entertainment options that you could possibly avail yourselves of. I mean, given the strength and popularity of gaming and Twitch and all these other avenues you could possibly pursue. So we'll see whether the experience of that is a communal one is one that continues to be enjoyed 10 years hence. I wouldn't be surprised if it's one that is a quaint vestige of a bygone age. But it's still funny to think that you could have gone down to 42nd Street, the Deuce, in 1983 and checked out The Deadly Spawn, a movie which began filming in 1981, took 2 years of these multiple families' lives and 6 to 8 months of editing thereafter to finally come out and find an actual audience. I mean, God bless these people for doing these kinds of things. And in the initial incarnation of the Really Awful Movies podcast, we did a lot more championing and profiling of indie filmmakers. And it's something we abandoned. It was also part of our show's ethos to and associated website, reallyawfulmovies.com, to review lots of indie features. And Wild Eye Releasing would send us tons of things, and we would interview filmmakers, up-and-coming and up-and-coming actors. And actually, Jeff is a co-producer of Killer Rack, a regional horror, I guess you could call it, here, south of the border, an hour from here in Buffalo, New York. So we have a bit of experience to be able to talk knowledgeably, speak knowledgeably about the regional horror space. And we just have nothing but admiration for people who finance and put together and hard scrabble film some kind of a production and get it out there and do the festival circuit and just basically hustle their buns off for something that frequently has very little payoff. And you can't, again, the things we've learned, I'm going to keep this one short here, but Deadly Spawn is just so much fun. Particularly, there's a scene where there's some old ladies, I think friends of the aunt who live in the home, and they're having like a tea time, lunchtime, and one of them preps a salad for her friends who've all come over for their weekly tea, and into which the food processor fell one of these gnarly creatures, and she blends it up unbeknownst to her, and all her friends dine on this rather disgusting concoction that was supposed to be, I think, salad dressing or some component of a salad. And it's just so well done when the creatures actually come and start biting the ankles of these elderly ladies. It's just super fun. You have this kid who's the protagonist, who's into the whole mise-en-scene behind his room is he's a like a Harryhausen monster aficionado, and he loves predating that. He loves the stop motion stuff, but all the King Kong movies, and there's his bedroom is basically a shrine to creature feature monster movies, and it adds a little dimension of fun. There's some choice lines about the scientific method, as one of the homeowner's sons is a grad student, kind of a nerdy fellow, and they all put their brains together and have to run away from and eventually fend for themselves and keep these creatures at bay. And these creatures proliferate, as these ones are wont to do. I mean, much like the invasion of the body snatchers, when the pods hatch, they multiply and take over other bodies. And so, again, it's not just one and done, the type of creature you're dealing with in the Deadly Spawn. It's multiple, and it's just... so much fun, just clocking in at a lean 78 minutes. You don't need to invest yourself of this whole lengthy, you don't need to invest yourself of, you know, like whether it's The Shining, love that film, but 2.5 hours is probably, I think The Shining is maybe the outlier that can get away with being that long. I think Dr. Sleep as well, and the latest Halloween film, just, I mean, keep it to 90 minutes, folks, you really don't need it. And Deadly Spawn clocks in at all of 78 minutes. And even though it sags too, I mean, it's pretty entertaining throughout. And you got these charming little vignettes of this family that lives in this home. And a little interpersonal relations with the characters and some dating. And just a charm to be had on all counts. I mean, honestly, if you love Terrorvision, if you really enjoy these kinds of icky, gooey, sticky creature feature movies, you're going to find something that will resonate with you in The Deadly Spawn. And again, you can't fault it for having a few problems here and there. But, you know, when the... The slippery leech-like creature protrudes through the kitchen sink. There's just little delightful scenes like that that just make this one so compelling, so endearing, and so enriching. It was just such a wonderful counterweight to Crimes of the Future, which I podcasted last week, and no slight on that one, but that's pretty heavy, heady, and cerebral, and this is the complete opposite. I'm going to give it a 3.25, super fun flick. It reminds you of people's real love for horror, and if you're a fan like we are of the Troma productions and things that are put out with the hope that it actually gets made rather than having a particular demographic or audience in mind. You just got to love that, because ultimately, whether it's a film like that or some Blumhouse $40 million production, this is what greases the wheel and whatever other metaphor you want to use about keeping the engine running for the horror space, which is what we all love. And hope you continue to love and enjoy the Really Awful Movies podcast, uploaded for your listening pleasure every Friday. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.